Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Wisdom Walk here on Black Hole Radio. I am your guide and host, Jojoba Maria Nsoroma, and I am celebrating this month 5 years of consecutive spiritual broadcast of Wisdom Walk. Wow. And Black Hole Radio is also celebrating 5 years of doing their litany of broadcasts. And, you know, it's just amazing. You know, I got involved in this not intentionally in the way, you know, some people would, which is that they, you know, map it out and figure it out and lay it out and, you know, pick, you know, how they would want to broadcast and all that stuff. I had just gotten a message and been getting messages from Spirit about broadcast. And you've got to spread the word. Got to spread the word, Judge of Pop broadcast. But I know that just because I get a message doesn't mean that I act on it. I have to wait. And sure enough, the opportunity presented itself, and I knew to say yes. And I just had no idea that, 5 years later, I would still be doing this once a week. So I'm really very, very fulfilled and happy to know that I have marked a fifth year of doing this important work. So I want to thank all my regular listeners out there and those of you who may be listening in for the first time, because clearly, and God knows, I couldn't do this without an audience. So thank you, thank you, thank you. A little bit about Wisdom Walk for those who may be listening in for the first time. It is a personal development resource for your mind, body, and soul. My ministry is any pain that is not transformed will be transferred. So the essential goal of my shows is to support listeners with learning how to recognize and release any pain that is blocking fulfillment in life, or what I like to call having your happy endings in life. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I broadcast live, and the show has an archive link that you may receive through a constant contact I send out or on my Facebook page, Wisdom Walk Radio, or the Facebook page for Black Hole Radio. And that link serves as the archive link once I've finished the live broadcast. So you can tune in and listen in at your convenience, as much or as little as you need to, and share that information with a friend or family member. But right now, I invite you to sit or lay back and join me for an exploration of the inner landscape, where you can connect to your soul and discover the true treasure of being human. Whew, here we come to the end of May this week, this huge transitional month. And, they really all have been. But this one was like a culmination. It's like really, really big. September is going to be another one that's off the chain. But, May has had some really huge stuff going on in it. And it's this transition from what we want to what we need, from what we want to what we need. And so it's a month where we're realigning our values and our higher purpose. So I thought it would be a perfect month to talk about the road to happiness, understanding happiness as a lifestyle, not an event. And tonight I'll be doing the last of the three parts of this conversation, of sharing these insights, by talking about releasing unhappiness. So before I get started, as always, I want to first honor the ancestors. And because this is Memorial Day weekend, I want to focus on the ancestors from World War I. But I also want to first mention about how Memorial Day came about, because a lot of people don't know that story. Hopefully more do. And if you've listened to me over the years, I tell it. I've been telling it for at least the last 3 years, I know. And it's a story of newly freed slaves in Charleston, South Carolina, who were given the task of burying the dead soldiers that had been imprisoned in a racetrack in the city. And it's so amazing after being in slavery for as long as they had and not getting access to the African culture. They didn't forget, and they really understood about the importance of honoring the dead. And so they end up, after the burying of creating a parade, which was led by the children. And they got instruments and played, and they marched around that racetrack doing this parade and honoring all those who had died, both the rebel soldiers as well as the Union soldiers. And when they finished their parade, they had barbecue. And there were Union soldiers and I think a general who was there at the time and was so taken by the show of honor and respect that word spreads and then it gets repeated in other parts of the country. And ultimately it gets acknowledged as important holiday, a way to honor veterans from wars. And again, the fact that it was started by these free slaves is phenomenal. And it's a story that had been buried for a while in American history, like so many stories. But it's interesting, it was the first female president of Harvard University, and I just don't have her name right now, who wrote a book about the Civil War with a focus on the death and dying. And the amount of people who died and how they died. And so she kind of brings this story to the light that it deserved in a PBS special that was done on her book and on her work. So thanks to her, we know more about that and we can really put some meaning to Memorial Day. It's not just a day like it was when I was a teenager where you got dressed up and went over to Coney Island. And it was like Coney Island opened up on Memorial Day weekend, you know, and it was some time to celebrate. But it also is wonderful to know where all the barbecuing comes from, you know, and why we do that. Again, it's clearly an African tradition. So I want to focus for a minute on ancestors from World War I because in November of this year, will be marking the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, which was the end of World War I, which was called the War to End All Wars. And, you know, it's hard for us because, you know, we see so much violence in the world we live in now in a way that, you know, it's become almost normal. And school shootings and like what happened in Las Vegas, you know, just become kind of part of our normal everyday experiences. And I think it's not that in the past people haven't experienced violence, but the level of gun violence in as modern and as educated a society as we are is very, very shocking. But for people back in the turn of the century experiencing World War I, the big shock was that it brought technology into warfare. So people had been fighting, you know, with swords and revolvers and horses and whatnot. But it was in World War I that not only does the first tank get introduced, so the first mechanized weaponry gets introduced. But also kind of genocidal warfare where gas was used to kill off soldiers, you know, chemical warfare got introduced. And so this was really, like, really horrendous stuff because people were still pretty, you know, pretty much sheltered around certain things. So this war really kind of shifts our consciousness. It shifts humanity. And unfortunately, we have to follow it up with a Second World War. But just to take a moment to think about and to honor all the soldiers, the doctors and nurses and medics, and all the citizens who lost their lives in that conflict, in that war, and especially where we are today in this world and the kind of place we are where we've forgotten about neutrality. We've forgotten what it means to create a neutral zone and what neutrality is really about. We need help from these ancestors. We really, really do, to help us remember collectively that not only do wars not solve anything, but it is such a horrible, horrible event for any person to have to go through, to have to experience. And so with the wars that are going on and the conflicts that are going on around the globe, the conflicts that are happening right in people's communities and people's neighborhoods, we call upon these ancestors from World War I to help us, help us, help us, to really help us know that there's another way to address our conflicts and to help us tap into that wisdom, that higher wisdom, so that we can, too, there being peace in the world, so that we can focus on the real issues that we need to be focusing on, which is how do we keep our water clean, how do we keep our water, how do we keep the air clean, how do we make sure that everybody has a decent place to lay their head at night, a decent place to live, you know, how that people aren't hungry, you know, how do we address those things? That's what we need to be putting our time and energy to. So ancestors, 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 we're calling out to you and we're thanking you, thanking you, thanking you for wanting to be helpful to us. We need your guidance. We need your love. We need your wisdom. We need your help to get to peace in the world, to be able to focus on the ecological, the sociological things that we really need to be focusing on as a species. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. And Creator, we asked you for this blessing of the ancestors. In the name of all that is holy, I say amen. Ashe Aho Asa Shinga Bismillah. So it is. So it is. Wow. What a time we are living in. So I want to talk about the elemental wisdom for this week, which starts tomorrow on the 28th, and the astrological forecast for this week as well. We do have some moon stuff coming on. But first, elementally, from Monday the 28th through Sunday, June 3rd, we have a nature week, and we're in a nature year. And so once again, we're just being reminded about the fact that there is going to be change. There's going to be change. And so the opportunity is about welcoming this change, about being courageous in the face of this change. Open the door fully to the new transformative challenges and learnings which the universe is providing in answer to and in support of your prayers, intentions, goals, and annual commitments. So, you know, all of this transformational stuff that is happening is coming out of us saying we want something different, we want something more. So there's no need to feel victimized by it. You ask for it. We need to receive the power of love and the supportive and playful energy of the nature element to experience the more of who we are, of who you are. So welcome the changes that are showing up. For some of you, they've already shown up. For some of you, you've gotten hints that they're coming. And for some of you, they are coming. And best to be in acceptance and to open up to, okay, how do I work with this and how do I integrate this into my life? So here's some distractions that you want to avoid so that you can stay present and open to the change. You want to avoid addictive behaviors in whatever form they take, because anytime change shows up, it will trigger the little child in you. And all addiction is rooted in our childhood trauma and our childhood disappointments and our childhood whatever. And so just know that it will be, you know, a pull to participate in that addictive behavior, whether it's drugs, alcohol, indiscriminate sexual activity, overworking, overshopping, overuse of Facebook and other social media tools and apparatus, you know, like really stay conscious and check yourself around falling into the trap of avoiding dealing with the pain that may be getting pushed up by the change. Being judgmental with yourself and others. Stay very, very awake to that. And when you find yourself doing it, stop it and say something loving and kind and compassionate to yourself. And last but not least, taking yourself or other people or things seriously. You know, like we can get really stuck and kind of latch on to thinking that, you know, things aren't going to change or that they're going to only change for the worse, you know, whatever it is. But no, don't take it so seriously. Things are, everything's changing all the time, whether we are conscious of it or not. And, you know, sometimes having a good sense of humor is the best way to move through change. The best way to move through it. So next Monday, after this nature week of change, we'll go into a mineral week, and I'll tell you all about that in the next broadcast. Now, astrologically, we've got another full moon showing up this Tuesday, May 29th. And from Barbara Goldsmith, she says, full moons have a tendency to bring things to a head. If something has been simmering below the surface, it could well come out at this time. Sagittarius is a restless sign, always seeking new adventures and new horizons. The full moon may show you where you are stuck in a rut, where you need to make a move outside your comfort zone. This is a great time to face powerful emotions head on. Like I said, when those changes come, you know, it can bring stuff up. Anything you may have been avoiding may come up for healing. How wonderful. With so much water prevalent in the stars, she says, trust your intuition. If something truly doesn't feel right, don't go against that message. And remember to be compassionate with yourself and to those around you. So, full moon in Sagittarius this Tuesday, bringing things up again. And why? So that we can go on to the new. You know, we've got a lot of new stuff that is wanting to come in, wanting to show up in our lives. And so, you know, the sign of Sagittarius is like, come on, come on, let's go, you know. And so whatever is blocking us, we will become more conscious of, and that is always a blessing. Now, for tonight's program about the road to happiness, I am going to do a quick review of the last two broadcasts I did to catch you up so that we can talk about releasing unhappiness, and then, of course, I will put out a personal challenge to you. My opening quote for this week comes from me. I thought it would be a good reinforcement of what I talked about last week. And I said, when you don't take things for granted, you are humble, noticeably appreciative, and at peace with yourself and the world. Sounds like happy to me. Yeah, that kind of sounds like happy to me. So, the road to happiness and why I talk about a road. There's a really great piece that Deepak Chopra did for public television about happiness, where he talks about the Buddha and uses his life example and some basic teachings from Buddha about how to get to enlightenment, which is what the happy is that I'm talking about. And Buddha talks about it as a road as well. It's called the Marga, It's about this road. And, you know, so the notion here is that if you want to really have happiness last, if you want it to be something that you can experience on a daily basis, then you have to learn how to create, if you will, the right conditions for it to exist. And so that means you have to work from the inside out. I've talked about happiness as a lifestyle, which means that you're able to know the difference between pleasure seeking and what really brings you fulfillment. Because pleasure seeking, those are things that aren't going to last. They're not going to last. They come, they go. But when I'm talking about happiness as a lifestyle, I'm talking about no matter what is going on in our lives, that we, especially when the challenges come, we don't get defeated. We don't get turned into something we're not. Because we're able to remember that happiness is what we're here for. It's what we're born for. It's what is natural for us. I think what happens is that we forget the way the universe really works. And it's very easy to believe that unhappiness and suffering and struggling is what reality and being human is all about. But that's not the truth. You know, the suffering, the challenges, the struggle are all things that we're supposed to overcome, that we're supposed to transcend. They're not supposed to be the lifestyle. They're just supposed to be the blocks along the way to our happiness lifestyle. And part of getting to your happy, you know, being able to not forget that what you're here to be is to be fulfilled in life, to be happy with yourself and with others. We, you know, it's so easy for us to get things twisted up. So I wanted to throw out that happiness is a lifestyle to say that it's something that we do have to work at. It's something that we have to journey to, especially if in childhood we experience unhappiness on a regular basis. Because if you did, then of course, as you're growing, you begin to believe that this is just how the world works. The beautiful thing about being an adult is anything that you experience in childhood, you can turn around. You don't have to keep holding on to those beliefs. And so I talked about in that first broadcast about the practice of humility and how that plays a very important role in changing up our perspective about what happiness really is. And I talked about humility as a love posture that trumps fear, because if you are going to change your perspective about happiness, you have to let go of what you know and believe about not being happy or how the universe works. I said that humility is knowing that you and your life has meaning and purpose, which is beyond just surviving, And humility isn't about us thinking less of ourselves. It's about thinking of ourselves less, meaning we expand our understanding of who we are and why we're here so that we get it that it's never just about us, that what is happening to me, what I'm doing, what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, it affects everybody and everything around me. And when I can really know that, really believe that, oh my goodness, I open myself up for learning how the universe really works. I open myself up to experiencing things that can unravel, if you will, and dismantle whatever beliefs from pain experiences had me thinking that all that I can have in life is suffering and struggling. I talk about true community as a network of relationships among humble people, people who really are able to believe that they have a purpose and there's meaning to their life, and that what I do and say to others comes back to me. So I want to be kind and I want to be gentle and I want to be compassionate, because that's how I want to experience life and I want to experience myself. So that kind of reciprocity. I also talked about being humble means letting go of controlling others and situations beyond my control. You're never going to get to happy by being in a control drama, you know, by trying to manipulate or to force people into doing what you think needs to be done in order for you to be happy. It doesn't work. Believe me, I've tried it. So being authentically humble means that you accept someone without trying to change them, and that you put the focus where it needs to be, which is on you, which is on you. So humility, being humble, and not about suffering in humility, no, but it means, again, really opening yourself up to learn something new and something more about yourself, about others, about life. And to be able to, you know, be on this journey to happiness, you have to really humble yourself. You have to let go of thinking that you can figure it out even. You know, because figuring out happy is, you know, participating in eHarmony.com or taking a Disney cruise or, you know, eating some delicious cake, you know, all the pleasurable things. If that's all that you're doing in order to be happy, you won't be happy. You won't be happy because none of those things last. So you can't get to happy from the outside in. It's got to be from the inside out. In other words, you've got to find your happy. You've got to get to what happiness really is. And then anything you do can be done from a place of joy, of acceptance, of fulfillment. Now, I gave a personal challenge in that first broadcast to just get you the experience of humility so that you could see how amazing the effects are, because you automatically feel good because you're choosing love over fear. And that, again, is an important definition of humility, choosing love over fear. You strengthen your love connection to yourself, to someone, to your life, when you are able to experience humility. And you also, most importantly, will attract people and situations to support your decision to stop taking your existence for granted. So the challenge was to connect with your God, to get still, physically humble yourself, and without even identifying what you need, just ask for it and say thank you. Just say, I need something. I don't know what it is, but thank you, thank you, thank you. Then I said to connect with your soul and contemplate what you appreciate about yourself and contemplate what you take for granted about yourself. And then I also said to commit to three ways that you would give, share, put conscious attention, appreciation, and gratitude to, with, and on yourself. Then last week, I talked about conscious appreciation and gratitude and how that rolls into the road to happiness. So once you're able to really humble yourself, to open up to the learning, to remembering that you really have a purpose and that you're willing to choose love over fear, then it's about really becoming conscious about what it is that you're taking for granted. Really practicing appreciation for what you have right now. You know, because if we aren't able to really understand how everything that we have in hand that we're experiencing now is part of what is going to get us to our fulfillment, we'll never get to fulfillment. And even for those things that are uncomfortable, even for those things that we don't like, what I call our evolutionary teachings, we can still be grateful for them. We can have an appreciation, let me say that, for them. So we may not like it, but we can appreciate it. Because, you know, challenges that are not good feeling, challenges that are painful, really do something to help open up our consciousness so that we become more aware of something that we need to shift. You can't take unhappiness into happiness. Let's be really clear about that. Really clear about that. So you've got to start with really kind of committing to learning how to know what is enough and to appreciate what you have. And then the more can show up, and then you can experience the more, you know. You know, it's a thing like if you get everything all at once, you're just not going to be able to really appreciate it. You know, when things happen too fast or too much comes in too fast, it's like you fall right into taking it for granted. And how many people haven't heard of the stories of people who win the lottery and, you know, within 5 to 10 years are bankrupt, you know, because for those people, it just came in too fast. It's too much, too fast. So we have to be able to appreciate again and really have gratitude for what we have in our hand right now, what we have right now. And so this conscious appreciation and gratitude combined with humility really supports us on this road to happiness. It's part of how we have to shift our perspective. We have to come up out of the unhappiness as what life is about. And so the personal challenge I gave was, again, connect with your God. Don't wait until things get bad. Again, ask for the help without identifying what exactly it is that you need. And then I asked you to contemplate what you appreciate about yourself, your loved ones, and your life. And then also to contemplate what about yourself, your loved ones, and your life that you take for granted. What are you taking for granted? And then I asked you to commit to three ways that you'll give, share, or put conscious attention, appreciation, and gratitude to, with, and on yourself, someone you love, or your life. And now that brings us to releasing happiness. So you have to first understand the humility piece and then the conscious appreciation and gratitude piece, because releasing unhappiness, the first thing you have to do is you have to choose happiness. And there are three things I want to talk with you about that supports that, supports your ability to choose happiness. You know, if you're in the knowing state, there's no way you're going to choose happiness, because you'll just keep believing I'm supposed to be unhappy. If you're not able to appreciate and have gratitude for where you are right now, and that right now might be, I don't have anything that is really making me happy, but at least I'm able to believe that I can be happy. Hey, you'd be grateful for that, you know? I mean, it's down to that, you know, to that dimension, you know. And, you know, when we get into that posture, we're more able to say, you know what, I want to choose happiness. I want to get happy. And so to get happy, here are the three things that I think are really, really supportive for you to be able to choose happiness. And when you choose happiness, you're automatically releasing unhappiness. So the first one, it's a block removal. It's about shifting the belief that unhappiness is your natural state and that happiness is only momentary, because the opposite is true. The Buddha says, according to Deepak Chopra, that suffering comes from not knowing how the universe works and living in wrong thinking. So shifting up your belief that unhappiness is your natural state. That, again, it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. And to me, it always starts with a prayer, like Lord, God, Allah, Buddha, you know, whatever you want to call a greater order and direction, you know, help me shift my belief that unhappiness, suffering, and struggling is my natural state. You know, it's got to start from there. You've got to ask for that help, because, you know, if your mind is locked down, especially from childhood, it's not going to be overnight. But if you put that prayer out, if you really get it, I've got to get this block removed, God, the universe will send you people, situations, ideas, information, whatever it is that you need in order to bust that up, in order to disrupt that belief pattern. You know, as soon as we become conscious that a belief system and a pattern doesn't really work for us, it really is gone, you know. But we're in this three-dimensional place, so we have to work at it, you know. You got to kind of work and experience some things, and then, you know, so it's, because it's not an intellectual exercise, you know. It's got to get down into the belly. But by starting off with a prayer, with an ask, and you shall receive, you know, I need help, things will come to you. Things will definitely come to you easily and effortlessly. They will. Now, the second support is you got to ask yourself. They call this cognitive therapy, you know, but you got to contemplate how being unhappy serves you. Yeah. In other words, if I'm holding onto a belief of unhappiness, it's got to be doing something for me in some way. And that's what you want to look at, because if you can unwrap that, if you can become more conscious of how unhappiness works for you, then you'll be better able to shift it. And because this stuff is coming from the past, you got to ask yourself, am I doing this to be loyal to the suffering of my ancestors? You know, if I choose happiness, but they didn't, you know, is that okay for me to do? You know, and if you have any kind of post-traumatic slave, Holocaust, or genocide syndrome, or whatever stuff from the past, let me tell you something. Your ancestors do not want you repeating what they went through. They want you to take the leap forward into the truth of how the universe works. They want you to be happy. That's what they want. So, but you need to investigate that. You need to look at that. Like, is there something going on inside of me that says it's not okay for me to be happy? You know, there's a very melodic and beautiful Brazilian song that comes from the movie Black Orpheus that was made back in like 1959, I think, and won the Palme d'Or from the Cannes Film Festival. And its opening song is called Felicidade, which means like happiness. But the song, the first lyric, the first sentence is Tristeza não tem fim, which means sadness has no end. And the song is talking about how, you know, happiness is very brief, you know, so don't get attached to it. Don't hang on to happiness, because you're just going to get this one day to do carnival, and then when that day is over, you're going to go back to the suffering and struggling of living in a favela on the side of a mountain and being sad. And, you know, I love that song because of the melody, but I hate it because of the lyric. But I understand how this is a whole belief system for a culture of people that, you know, be happy with this one day of happiness that you get every year, but don't expect it any other time. And I think that a lot of us live like that. You know, a lot of us live for, you know, I can only be happy when I'm watching a football game, but the rest of the time, you know, life just sucks. So, again, really asking that hard question about how is being unhappy serving me? Is unhappiness kind of a way to keep people away from you? That's another one. Have you been so wounded that you can't trust? You can't trust people to not hurt you? And so if I stay unhappy and miserable, then nobody will get close to me and I don't have to worry about that. You know, that's the kind of thing you want to think about. What's going on? That how is being unhappy serving you? Important to crack that code, because if you don't, it will block whatever intellectual stuff you have going on about I ought to be happy, you know. And so you want to get to the source of that, what's going on. And then last but not least, to support choosing happiness, which is like, you know, this is really about choosing love over fear, you know, back to being humble. You have to choose to live in, through, and on purpose. Sounds simple, but we live in a culture that has really oriented us and conditioned us to forego purpose for economic success. So our schools are all engineered, literally engineered, to have children getting good grades so that they can get jobs that will pay them money to pay off their college loans and to, you know, spend money in the real estate market and go shopping, you know, stores and malls. You know, so we've got a whole system of education that really is engineered to support the economy. And, I mean, it really was created for that. And the public school system in the United States was created by Henry Ford and Thomas Edison and all the people that needed workers in their factory. And so they said, let's teach them what is going to help them be able to be good workers in our factory. It wasn't about, let's create a school system that will support children in discovering their purpose so that they can live fulfilling lives. No, it was, let's get them to be good factory workers. And we continue to do that, even though in modern times it's a little more covered up, you know. But I can tell you how many unhappy people are making very high-paying salary jobs. But they're not happy. They're not happy. So we need to know what our purpose is in life. And the first thing is to accept that you have a higher purpose, that you're not disposable. And then you have to make a commitment to knowing what your purpose is. And you can do that, again, through a prayer. God, enable me to become conscious of my purpose, because you were born on purpose. You were born with your purpose inside of you. No one needs to really tell you. It's something that's inside of you. You just need support in remembering it, remembering it. And then you have to make a commitment to living it, to make a commitment to living on purpose, which means that you may have to let go of people and situations and living spaces and countries even in order to really be on purpose. But that, in combination with cracking the code about why you choose unhappy more easily than happy, and getting rid of that belief that unhappiness is a natural state, all of these together will really help you to release unhappiness. And when you do that, you automatically are going to be happy. You're going to be fulfilled. So here's a personal challenge for this week and for this month, really. This is a combination of all of it. I want you to put yourself around happy people and learn how they found happiness. I want you to identify at least three people you know or know of who have demonstrated the ability to choose love over fear. That's the most important thing. So these are not people who are sitting up with conspiracy beliefs. These are not people that, you know, are supportive of Donald Trump. You know, you want people who really, really demonstrated choosing love over fear. They're not pleasure seekers, okay? But these are people who have chosen to live on purpose, and they believe in fulfillment in life. You know, this is what elders are supposed to be. But our culture, which, again, has groomed people to give their young lives and their energy over to, you know, a corporation rather than to their purpose, you have people who retire and feel entitled to do pleasure seeking because they put it off when they were, you know, giving all their energy and their time and their talent to something else and not what it is that they really, really wanted to do or be or what they were supposed to be. And so it can be hard to find people like my grandmother and grandfather that I was blessed to grow up with, because I really got to be around happy people. And, you know, they didn't have much. And I would, you know, and I was a yuppie in the 80s, right, you know. And this is what young people are supposed to do. Young people are supposed to be pleasure seekers, you know. And so, and I was making good money, and I would be spending money, and I would say to my grandparents, why do you wear the same clothes every day? Why don't you go out and buy some new shoes? Grandma, go get a new hat. Grandpa, why don't you wear another shirt? Why don't you do that? And my grandfather had all these clothes that were still in gift boxes from what the family gave him for Christmas and Father's Day, you know. But he didn't need it because he was okay with what he had. It was enough for him. And then if, you know, something got really raggedy, he'd go down to, you know, the, you know, five and dime store and get another one. But it, you know, but it just wasn't about pleasure seeking. For them, what was important is that I was okay, my sister, my brother, my mother, that they were okay and healthy, that there was always good food on the table, that the house was open to receive even strangers and to help people feel good about being alive, that education and culture mattered, you know, and their days were spent just really being happy. And also they helped out the neighbors. My grandfather was always being called on, Mr. Brown, could you come look at my car? Mr. Brown, could you help me fix this chair, you know? And that was his purpose. And my grandmother, too, she would watch people's babies or people could come by and she'd give them advice, you know, and they just really live in such a state of happiness. And I couldn't understand it when I was little, because I'm like, you should be out having fun, you know. But that was fun for them, you know, because they were fulfilled. And also they had each other. They had their relationship, which was just what love is really about. So, you know, in this day and time, it can be really hard to find people like that. But they're out there. They do exist, you know. And you can find those people that really know how to choose love over fear and who are not caught up, you know, in this phenomena of, you know, happiness means pleasure seeking, because it doesn't. It doesn't. And, you know, challenges are what enable us to achieve fulfillment. They give us something to work through in order to be able to have our happy endings in life. And fulfillment comes from a sense of accomplishment, from making a difference, from expressing creativity, and from helping other people be happy, like my grandparents. So there you have it. There you have it. The road to happiness. And I'm going to close out tonight by, as I always do, thanking my engineer, and tonight it was Brother Forrest, whose health is doing very well. He told me he's following his regimen of everything he's supposed to do, and he is doing well. So I'm so grateful for that. And to the entire Black Hole Be Well family, thank you, thank you, thank you for these 5 years of consecutive broadcasts of spirituality and for supporting this work that I do. I am so, so grateful. And to all my regular listeners, especially Miss Sarah, who really, I can't tell you how much she continues to prove that life is what you make it and that happiness is fulfillment, not pleasure seeking. And to all those who have wisdom walk with me, and you know who you are, to my family and spiritual kin, my transformational leadership colleagues, my medicine brothers and sisters around the world, and those who are listening in for the first time, thank you. Thank you very much. I couldn't do this without your listenership. Now, next week, I'll begin a 3-part program on the road to love. I figured since we did happiness in May, got to do love in June. Don't forget about my Wisdom Walk Radio Facebook page, where you can always find the links to the these programs under the events. I am, again, working on a website, and once that comes together, which should be by the end of June, I will definitely let you know about it. But last but not least, I'd like to thank my God, my ancestors, my spirit guides and loving entities, everything that walks with me, keeps my head to the sky, my feet to the ground, and my heart open to do this important work with and for all of you. Have a fabulous Nature Week of Change with a full moon in Sagittarius. And remember, you are not disposable. You are divine. Good night now.
I hope you enjoy Convergence, and thanks again for sharing this part of your lives with us. It's been a real pleasure.